We would like to dedicate tonight's show to Kevin Ward Jr. and the late driver passed away Saturday after the incident at Canandaigua Motor Speedway. We had a chance to work with Kevin during the Canadian Nationals and such, and his great family, and I can't imagine what they're going through right now. So if you want to do something in Kevin's honor, the family has requested that, please make donations to the Empire Super Sprints Injured Drivers Fund at 5562 Bear Road, Apartment C2, North Syracuse, New York, 13212. Thank you, Beth. We have returned safely from Knoxville, Iowa. I'm just a little bummed we couldn't bring any of the food with us. That was awesome. And welcome to our 2014 FVP Knoxville Nationals presented by Casey's General Stores recap show. We just got done with four races in three nights, what turned out to be on our Knoxville trip this year after Wednesday got rained out, but had a busy Thursday through Saturday. If you take the rain out of the equation on Wednesday, it was probably one of the best temperature, pardon me, nationals we've ever had. So with the temperature and stuff, it was great. And what an incredible way to be able to walk around the grounds and stuff. It was a little nerve-wracking at first when we saw the forecast, but fortunately, Mother Nature started playing better in the week, and we had a great time out at the Knoxville Nationals. And it was a busy time, and because of the compressed schedule, we didn't do as many post-race podcasts as we wanted to. We were only able to really crank out one because we did the one Thursday, and then by the time Friday came along, we had to get up for a doubleheader on Saturday. So worst case scenario happened, we had to double up a day, and that pretty much killed all the podcasts off because there was no time to do them. But benefit is, for the Monday show, we have tons of stuff here to talk about, and we're going to start with how the week started with our media luncheon. A couple of pieces from audio from that. There wasn't anything real remarkable out of the deal for the race, and it was pretty good. So what we're going to do is we're going to kick things off with general manager over there at Knoxville Raceway, Brian Stickle. He welcomed all the press there. He talked about what I joke is the facilities arm race that we're in right now. And it seems like the improvements are cranking up as the economy gets better, and Knoxville's no different. And Brian Stickle talked about some of the things they plan on doing at the Knoxville Raceway.
Again, we appreciate you all being here. You know, as Knoxville's made a lot of good improvements this year, thanks to the Marion County Fair Board and their vision for the future for the Knoxville Raceway. We hope to do some major capital improvements here in the next several years. Many of you have not had an opportunity to see our new scoreboard, so thanks to a mishap during a race and wheel that seemed to like the middle of the old scoreboard. And David Goodson and Impact Racing, we have a new scoreboard that's high definition, 36 by 17 foot. We hope in the next 3 years to build some new suites. That's a place we have shortage right now down in turn one. We hope to build some sort of suite structure where we can add 300 to 360 new suites, seats, and accommodate more of our fans who like to sit in a little more luxury. We'd also like that to be our new ticket windows as we sell more and more tickets, which we do hope to sell out Saturday night. And I think we're on pace for that, which will be a good thing for all of us. We'll have 25,000 people in the stands and another 5,000 people, it seems like, in the pits. And again, making this the biggest sprint car race in the world. The Knoxville World Challenge, the Speed Sport World Challenge, thanks to all our promoters from Down Under and Premier Speedway and our other tracks that are here that run a World Challenge qualifier, it's a pretty cool event. We have the moniker Uniting Nations Through Motorsports. I think many of you guys, all you guys, go Down Under and do compete down there, and it's just a great exchange, if you will. And I think that event will see it grow and get more international exposure, which is good for everybody.
That was Brian Stickle to kick off things with. Normally it would be the second event of we'd have the Wednesday race, and then our second press conference was the press luncheon. It was a pleasure to have Terry McCarl, Justin Henderson, Joey Saldana, and Paul McMahon join us for the press conference this year. Of course, Terry McCarl had his thoughts being from a Knoxville point of view on the increased competition with the television show, everything else going on at Knoxville. It seems like the competition level has been raised quite a bit, and McCarl weighed in on that.
It's amazing what we've put together, these guys have put together at Knoxville, and obviously it's the Sprint Car Capital of the World, the most awesome facility in the world, and unfortunate accident got us a lot better scoreboard, but the competition here every week is unbelievable. It's like a mini outlaw show, and it's made it tough. I think like Justin and I have been qualifying really good, and it's kind of hurt us a little bit actually, because we've worked every week, ate every week, and everybody in front of you is really, really strong, so... like I said, it's been like a little mini outlaw show every week. I think the fans are really enjoying it, and everything about Knoxville is top notch. And it's kind of like you need to get out and see other racetracks and see. When you do, you see how much Knoxville puts into this and how much we appreciate everything, just the push trucks and the track prep and the lighting. Everything here is so top notch. So this is just it's the best place. Unfortunately, I live 30 minutes away, and so it's an easy commute for me, and they pay the best, and the point fund's the best, and so it works out pretty good to try to make a living a little bit here racing. But actually, the best thing, Knoxville's the best, but it kind of hurts because it's tough for any other track to compete with them and run sprint cars, so we have to run about 5 hours away to Houston's every Sunday to find another place to race. I wish there was a few more tracks a little closer that we could run for, but... it's just fortunate. Like I said, I've been coming here since Joe Saldana was running, and seen a lot of great races and a lot of great times. I remember those years with Jerry Blundy and Joe Saldana and Roger Rager, and it seemed like really good ones. Seemed like really, really tough years, but I think this year is definitely the toughest competition Knoxville's ever had.
That's Terry McCarl on the Knoxville competition. We also had Justin Henderson on the program, and Justin's always a really interesting guy, and he dropped this little interesting piece of knowledge I wanted to share with you about how he handles his relationship with his team and his team owners, some advice from a sprint car legend, and I thought it was really neat to share with you. So here's what Justin Henderson had to see, how he approaches his team relationship.
Yeah, it's pretty simple. I don't really talk to those guys at all until it's race day, and they do a fantastic job of preparing the cars, and they're always fun to drive. So, he told me a long time ago, he can't really take it word for word, but he said you don't want to be friends with your car owners, and it's kind of leads to the emotional side of things. When you're real friendly with your car owners, it's really easy to get emotional. A lot of drama creeps in that nobody really needs, but when it's just business, it almost makes it more of an easy thing to do. You come to work, and even though racing for me is not work, but you come do your job, and hopefully I bring my A game and they bring their A game every week, and we combine to make a winning combination, and it has been a joy. Every time you sit in the car, it's fast and it has speed, and it allows me to not be perfect and still stay toward the front. And like Terry said, qualifying fast and starting eighth every week or in that vicinity really has taught us, not taught us, but kept us passing cars all year, and striving to get to the front, so I think that's going to help us this week. Hopefully the heat races won't be terribly tough or too fast, so we'll race to the front as fast as we can, try to get as many points every time we hit the track.
That was Justin Henderson, and I also asked Justin and Terry what they might be up to after the Knoxville season's completed here in a couple of weeks, and they both have completely different plans. Here's what Justin Henderson and Terry McCarl said about their post-Knoxville plans for 2014.
Since I'm holding the mic, I guess I'll go first. Really, I don't have a lot of races after the Nationals. Of course, we'll be here one more time at least, unless they decide to throw another rain date in there. I'm not sure if we've heard on that or not. But Houston's has got a couple more shows left, and then I've got some outlaw shows that I'll be hitting in the upper Midwest, hopefully Clay County and Deer Creek and stuff like that in the BR Speed Car. From T South Dakota, and that's about all for me.
I'm never sure what I'm gonna do. I gotta keep racing or get a real job, and I don't wanna do that. So we're definitely gonna try to find a race somewhere. I plan on finishing with the World Finals in November with my team, and I drive for Jeremy Scadden, number 6 up in Sioux Falls and in that area, and some 360 shows. So I've been driving Jimmy Davies, number 99 360 at some of the Sprint Invader shows and things. So I'm not sure what their exact schedule is, but you know, I'll be racing every weekend somewhere, somehow, in something. So our season, like I said, we're hoping to finish up at the World Finals, a great event down there in Charlotte, and they really built that thing up into a fun event to go to just as a driver and competitor, and it's a lot of fun to watch those other classes of cars too. So you know, we'll hope to do that and hopefully go back to Australia again this in January and run down a Warrnambool and the Classic. And, you know, the Classic to me is like the Knoxville Nationals of Australia. It's just a great, it reminds me of when I was a kid around here. It's just a lot of fun, and the fans are awesome to the Americans around there. They built that thing up too. There's so many Americans going. It's a really, really tough event to do. We ran second a couple years ago. So hopefully we can do that and go back with the Outlaws starting in February. So this is, it seems like you have a lot of time off, you know, after the World Finals till maybe you leave for Australia or till Florida. But, you know, with all the holidays and building new cars and things like that, it goes pretty quick.
That's Terry McCaro, and since no one in the media seemed to want any, to ask very many questions for some reason during the luncheon today or on Thursday, Terry McCaro started asking questions, and so he started picking on Joey Saldana a little bit to get some more information. Turned out to be a really neat story about one of Joey's father's cars that he has, and here's the interaction between McCaro and Joey Saldana.
I got one for Joey. Mr. Saldana, how's that car going? I tell you, his dad was my favorite driver. That red number two was just my favorite car. And his dad has got it back now, and I think he's got it restored. Is it done, and where's it at? And I'd like to see, is it in the Hall of Fame? Or?
Yeah, it was at the Hall of Fame last year, and then they took it to the Indy 500 in Monday May for they wanted to, like, where drivers came from and how they made it to the speedway, and they used that car, so it's pretty neat that that car made it from here to Indy, so it's in my shop right now, so it's a pretty cool home for me. I love going and looking at it.
So Joey Saldana talking about that car of his father's actually got taken to Indianapolis, very neat deal, and another aspect that Kyle Luters asked Joey and Paul McMahon about is their relationship off the track. They're good friends, and they like to pick on each other on social media and all kinds of stuff, and that carried over to the press conference.
I think the biggest thing in racing is it's very hard to separate racing from personal life. So I think our wives keep us grounded and realizing that racing's not everything. So I don't know, we have a pretty good relationship. Our kids get along, which I think that helps, and our wives get along, and, you know, I think when it comes to race day, we just race, and whatever happens, happens. But it works pretty well for us, and I'm lucky to have a good friend in Paul.
Yeah, you're up.
Yeah, Joey summed it up right there. It's just, you know, our wives are best friends, and me and Joey are casualties of it. We're some pretty happy friends. And like I said, the kids get along very well. You know, he's always, we've had this friendship for a long time. You know, I got hurt years ago and was stuck in Indianapolis to go to Dr. Trammell for my shoulder. And, you know, I was just always, Joe gave me a shop to plug into and sit my motor home and whatever I needed. And just a good friendship. I mean, not many people have that in our sport. And, you know, I'm fortunate to have a guy like him to just run up and down the highway and have a good time together. Even outside of racing, we do things together. So it's a lot of fun.
That was Paul McMahon and Joey Saldana, their take on their friendship off the racetrack. And then someone asked them about the most memorable moments at the Knoxville Nationals for all four of the panelists, and they shared some stories with us.
I have to say, besides me crashing and sitting the next 4 days in the hospital, was the year Bobby Allen won. That was my first Knoxville Nationals I ever been to, and to see the emotion of Mark Kinzer when he broke, you know, how disappointed he was, and to see the raw emotion of Bobby Allen, the guy that nobody in the stands thought he would win. I mean, this thing's smoking, and he's coming off the floor, and everybody, I mean, I'm cheering for him, and there's guys from other crews that are down there cheering for him, so that had to be my most memorable moment here at Knoxville.
I'd have to say for me, I think it's 2009,
I got beat, so not much fun. But I think it was when we changed the format from 30 laps to 40 laps, and I wish it was 30 laps. And then Donnie shots with the one. So, but just for me, that sticks out. That's pretty. It's a pretty humbling experience, and we just try and learn from it and get better, and hopefully you can win one.
I mean, I've got a lot of them, but I think for me is 2004 when I led it. Probably should have won it, but I just remember going down the back straightaway early in the race, and I remember vividly just going down the back straightaway, and I'm like, I am leading the Knoxville Nationals. This is awesome. I mean, it was, we were so fast, and one of the bad things about that night was the yellow cup, we had like five yellow flags or something, and I'll go down the back straightaway and we're leading, everything's good, and I look up, I see the scoreboard, and they're interviewing my wife, and I can see her face and emotion. I'm like, oh my God, it freaked me out. I'm like, I can't look, you know, because it got me like, oh shit, I can't look at it. Sorry.
That's okay.
Okay. Wait, I'm going to get fined by the Outlaws. But, yeah, we just lead the Knoxville Nationals and, you know, been going for so long. And just to say you led it is a pretty good accomplishment, even without winning. But that was a pretty good feeling for me.
I don't know. I think last year is pretty hard to beat as far as my memories go of the Nationals altogether. But one of the biggest years that sticks out when I was a kid, I suppose I was around 10 years old. My dad crashed really hard and wanted to. And, you know, the next week, hanging around in the hospital, kind of waiting for Dad to come to and be normal again was probably the biggest memory. So this place can bite you, too. But, you know, you always kind of want to remember the good parts of Knoxville. Stevie Smith almost beating Steve Kinzer until we got rain and had tornado warnings and had to hide under the grandstands. That was pretty cool. One of the first years in the backstretch that was. So that sticks off in my head as well.
We also asked what Saldana and McMahon might be doing this offseason with the Winter Series down in Arizona, Australia, Chili Bowl, lots of options, and the answers were all over the map.
For me, I'm actually building a midget, which I don't know why, but I'm building a midget. My dad hates it, so maybe that's why I'm doing it. But I just had a lot of fun at Chili Bowl last year with Brian Clausen, so I'm building a midget for that, and then... we might do some racing in Arizona. We've talked about it, but we don't really know for sure. But for me, I think my Australia days are over. My sons, they believe in Santa Claus, so I got to keep that that memory for them going. So you don't want to miss Christmas too much. And obviously, for Australia, Boxing Day is a big race, and if you're going to go over there, they want you to go for that. So I'd have to say them days for me are over. And luckily, I've had some success over there, so I feel like, you know, everything I've done over there, I've completed what I wanted to do, so I'm content staying home for Christmas.
I'm gonna, probably, you know, I'm definitely gonna be down in Arizona for the winter series that they're having. You know, I always say I'm not going back to Australia, but I always end up getting about Knoxville time and talking to a few Australian friends of mine. Deciding I'd like to go back for the Classic again. That's one race I enjoy. I haven't been able to win yet. And, you know, it's one of the races you want to win. So, you know, probably a little family vacation, a little racing, a little more racing in Australia. Try to stay where it's warm. That's my biggest thing.
So that is their plans for this off season. It'll be interesting to see Saldana at the Chili Bowl. I think it'll be kind of neat to see him in his own car. He's very technically savvy with the race cars and stuff. I'll be interested to see what he comes up with. And, of course, McMahon traveling all over the place to race. And, of course, we had to ask everyone what they thought of the Steve Kinzer's farewell tour on the World of Outlaw circuit. Of course, more than likely, we're going to see Steve racing some more. But this is his last full tour of the World of Outlaws. And all the drivers weighed in on Steve Kinzer.
I really don't know how you can sum up Steve Kinzer, they can sport one word. You know, it's unbelievable what he's done to race 35 years, you know, as competitively as he has. You know, I mean, it's not going to miss him, but going to miss him. You know, it's one of them things. Like I said, I guess it's just... I guess to sum it up one word, just be amazing what he's done. You know, it's just the guy's a legend. I remember I was 7 years old when I met him for the first time at West Capitol Raceway. And, you know, you hear Steve Kinsler, and you're like, who? You know, at that age, I was Wally Baker, Gary Patterson for me. And you hear Steve Kinsler, you don't know, Rick Ferkel was there. And you don't even know who these guys are. And then they come back, and now I race with them and got to drive for Rick. And, you know, there's no way you can sum up in one word with Steve Kinsler. I mean, just legend.
Well, I think we all owe him a lot of, I don't know what word I'm looking for, but I think we wouldn't race for the money we're racing for if it wasn't for Steve Kinsler, and we all couldn't be professional sprint car drivers if it wasn't for Steve Kinsler. He's definitely paved the road for us, and I don't think it's the end of Steve Kinsler. I think there's a lot of Steve Kinsler yet to come. Next year, we'll probably make more money than what we all ever imagined. So I think this is just a stepping stone for Steve. But I don't know. He's a legend. My dad got to drive a couple cars for him. And, you know, I don't think people realize what the guy accomplished. I mean, I remember my dad telling me he qualified as a champ car at Four Crown for him. I think he put it on the pole. I can't remember. But Steve couldn't get there in time, so he had to get in. It started dead last and won. So... that's a non-wing car. It's not a wing car. It's a champ car, and he's just a huge talent to sprint car race, and he's our Michael Jordan. So it's pretty amazing when we get to witness what he's doing, and it's just an honor to be on the racetrack with him.
Well, I pretty much said everything I probably want to say. I've just been fortunate enough to. You know, I was out there, I think, when he won 56 features and watched some of the amazing things he did. And, you know, like Joey said, I remember at Calistoga one night, and it was really slick. He couldn't pass, and on the start, he got the front end knocked out of it. And everybody was thinking, all right, he's not going to win tonight. Now he's really screwed now. And, I mean, it was, I don't think anyone passed anybody. And he went to the back, Carl got the front end changed, and he won it from the back. I always felt bad for Brad Doty because... I think Brad started and finished every, and that's back when we ran 104 nights. I mean, that's a lot of nights. And I think Brad started and finished every single race that year, which is amazing. And he was super fast and, you know, one of the best guys out there and still didn't win the championship because, you know, Steve won 56 features. I remember he would, he didn't win for about 2 weeks and everybody's like, oh, he's washed up. He's done. Another favorite story of mine is that we were at San Jose right during that time when he was winning everything, and my wife Lori went up to the lineup board, and there's Steve up there smoking like a chimney like he does. And he's like, Lori, how many are they taking out of these heat races? You know, she's like, oh, five. And he's like, oh, I got a tough heat race. Oh, my God. She's like, you're worried about making it out of the heat race? Oh, my God, that's a tough heat race. She's like, I cannot believe this guy. He's going to be a... So that's how he was. I mean, he never took anything for granted. And unbelievable competitor. And you know, obviously tough as nails. And, I can't remember when I was younger, he got burned real bad on his leg. And it was like bleeding through his uniform and everything. And he, you know, still went out there and won. So that's some of the things people don't really know. He's been hurt a little bit. He doesn't really show it. But, he's old school, tough guy. And... it's going to be an era gone by to see him leave, but I got a lot of great memories, and you know, he's definitely the best friend car driver they ever lived.
That's Terry McCarl on Steve Kinsler. We're going to take a commercial break, and when we come back, we are going to talk about more about the Nationals. We'll move into the Thursday preliminary and a few other things we have up on our sleeves. You are listening to TJ Sideways Live here on RacesOnTheWeb.com.
Engine Pro, the nation's leading specialty engine parts distributor, featuring name brand engine parts and custom engine kits sold by professional rebuilders. With 29 distribution centers providing engine builders and machine shops across the country with a full line of brand name internal engine components at competitive prices. Engine Pro is committed to building the success of their customers by offering competitive pricing, innovative programs, and knowledgeable sales representatives. For more information, visit our website at engineproparts.com. It pays to know a pro. Engine Pro.
If if you're looking to add a little edge to your racing program, repair your engine, maybe even look into a new engine, Bailey Racing Engines of Coldwater, Michigan is a fine supporter of TJSlideways.com. Visit them online at BaileyEngines.com or call them at 517-278-8488.
All-Star Performance is a manufacturer and supplier of racing and high-performance auto parts, accessories, and specialty tools. From quarter midgets to sprint cars, All-Star Performance has all of the accessories you need. To find a dealer near you, visit allstarperformance.com.
TJ Buffenbarger here for the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville, Iowa. The Hall of Fame continues to promote the future of sprint car racing by preserving its past. The museum is located in Knoxville, Iowa, and is open Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., and Saturday and Sunday from noon to 5 p.m. On race nights, the museum will stay open until 7 o'clock. Don't forget, race fans, one of the best ways that you can support the Hall of Fame is buying a membership. They start at just $25, and a basic membership gets you and a guest free admission to the museum and a 10% discount off in the museum store. Also, check with the Hall of Fame for suite tickets on the second and third floor for the 2013 Knoxville season. You can get information on all of this by going to SprintCarHOF.com, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame.
Blade Shock Technology is a cutting-edge shock bump stop technology company located in Northwest Ohio. Specializing in sprint car racing, new and used sales, service, and repair, Eric Slade and his crew have over 30 years' experience working with shocks, from the short tracks to the super speedways. For more information, visit SladeShockTechnology.com. Slade Shock Technology, where knowledge and experience make the difference.
If you're looking for new or used shocks or repair for your shocks or bump stop kits, make sure to check out Slade Shock Technology. Eric Slade has experience from sprint cars to NASCARs. He was in shocks before it was trendy, and now that's the hot thing in racing. You need to get your shock program in shape. Visit www.sladeshocktechnology.com for everything they offer. Slade Shock Technology. Get with the program. Get your shocks in shape.
There's a buzz in the bleachers, a rumble on the pavement, and the sweet smell of sprint car speed is in the air. As Muncie Racing brings you the fastest short track event on earth, watch as the most daring lead foots in the land stand on the gas and rocket around one of the fastest half miles in America. There are records to be broken and racing royalty in the pits. It's a flat out, foot on the floor sprint car fiesta, and you can't find this brand of adrenaline-soaked action anywhere else.
If you love sprint car racing like we do, you need to get yourself to Pennsylvania this summer. Already recognized as one of the 10 must-see races of the year, the first annual Dirt Classic presented by Casey Kane on Saturday, September 27th, is stacking up to be a premier event. The race will be held at Lincoln Speedway and boasts the highest payout in the track's history, with $20,000 on the line to the winner. But you don't have to wait till September to get your Dirt Classic picks. Tickets can be purchased at www.dirtclassic.com for reserved seating and general admission. Save your seat now and save $5 when ordering. The Dirt Classic presented by Casey Kane, Saturday, September 27th at Lincoln Speedway.
Engine Pro, the nation's leading specialty engine parts distributor, featuring name brand engine parts and custom engine kits sold by professional rebuilders. With 29 distribution centers providing engine builders and machine shops across the country with a full line of brand name internal engine components at competitive prices. Engine Pro is committed to building the success of their customers by offering competitive pricing, innovative programs, and knowledgeable sales representatives. For more information, visit our website at engineproparts.com. It pays to know a pro. Engine Pro.
Welcome back to TJ Sideways Live here at racesontheweb.com. Wouldn't be going on the road and coming back to the studio without a technical problem, right? So we're back on the air, and glad you've joined us for our 2014 Knoxville Nationals review. And we'll get kicked off with the Thursday program post-race. Great battle between Brian Brown, Sam Havertape, and Kerry Mattson scoring the top three. Brownie continuing to raise hopes on Thursday for the local crowd, winning the preliminary feature. And let's start off with Sam, though. Interesting story, taking the team over himself this year from his father. Kind of a low-budget deal, and came out with a good finish at the Nationals, and he broke the whole thing down for us.
Budget's pretty tight, to be honest. To run good tonight is awesome, and run good last week was awesome. But no, in all honesty, came here tonight. My goal every time I come to the Knoxville Nationals AMA, it realistically is to make the main event on Saturday night, and that's our goal. And tonight I think we may have, I don't know, you know, we're going to be close. But yeah, that is our goal every time we come here. I mean, if we are more geared around this place like Brown is and Mattson and had a team like that, you know, maybe our expectations would be a little bit different. But, you know, we have to be realistic here. You know, the amount of money we spend versus what those guys spend, you know, we just have to be realistic and realize that, hey, we're in a different area than those guys are. But, yeah, it doesn't stop us from trying. We're still trying to win.
That was Sam on his second place finish. And a little later in our interviews with Sam Havertape, he broke down about racing through traffic with Brown and for the top spot and what happened through that.
Well, we set up for that. I mean, we set up for traffic. I mean, I knew it was going to be tight in traffic, and I knew we were going to get in a ton of it. And with the track being as fast as it was tonight, when you get in traffic like that, it gets the front of these cars really, really tight. So we set up for that, and unfortunately, the red came out there, and you know, we knew we probably weren't going to be as good as other guys in clean air, but I knew that I could probably outdrive a couple of those guys and get through the lap cars. I knew if I held Brown behind me that we'd have a good chance of winning tonight, and you know, and we almost did. But you know, Brown's the best guy in the business here, so to get beat by him, I'm not too mad about it.
Sam also broke down more about his race team with us. Here's what he had to say about it.
For sure. I mean, I'll tell you right now, I got one crew guy, and he works his ass off, you know. And I've chewed his ass the past few days, and I told him, hey, man, it's the biggest race of the year. It's time to go, you know. And you know, we like to have a good time, and we like to party sometimes. And he's a young kid, so no. And he's a young kid, so you know, I'm a little older now. I'm 28, and I've been through it all, and just had to remind him, hey, you know, there's a time and a place for that, and when we get through all this, we can have a good time. So we're going to go have a good time tonight.
For your team, you mentioned not having the budget, some of the other ones. What does it mean just to make this A main for your team and be able to go the rest of the year?
Well, the engine in the car is practically the only one we've got that's really worth running here. So for it to stay together for all 25, I was pretty happy about that. So going forward, you know, our budget's not big, and, you know, I'm not complaining. I'm a very lucky individual to be able to do what we're doing. Is just awesome. You know, my dad kind of handed everything over to me this year and said, hey, I'm out. You know, I can't afford to do it anymore. And, you know, you know, I've been working my ass off, to be honest. I've been trying to build my own engines and rebuild my own engines, and you know, I think I'm doing a pretty decent job. It's a lot of hard work, and you know, without guys like Charlie Fisher helping me out, and like guys like Dennis Wells, you know, if it wasn't for those guys, you know, we couldn't be where we are right now.
One last thought from Sam. He broke down some more about what he might be doing 410 and 360 wise for the rest of the 2014 season.
Well, I've got all the parts to put together another 360 right now, and we were actually supposed to run it last week but ran out of time to put it together. So we're going to build another 360, and hopefully we can gather up some sponsors to help me build one more 410. And if I get all that stuff in my stable, you know, I'm not even looking what I'm going to do the end of the year. I'm looking what I'm going to do towards next year. You know, I'm trying to get everything in order and everything in line to really go hard at it next year. I don't want to be tied down to one series. I want to be able to travel and make some money. You know, it's some big races. You know, unfortunately, you know, we're kind of stuck in one area right now. It's not a bad thing. You know, the ASC still is a good deal for us right now, because financially we can't do the 410 deal. So right now I'm not looking ahead. I'm looking race to race, and whatever happens. But over the winter time, I really want to get all my ducks in a row and get our team in a place where when we start the year out, we're prepared.
Carrie Madsen also ended up on a podium with the hometown Kinnerick Racing Team, as hometown as an Australian team can get when their home base is in Knoxville. And Carrie sat down with us, and he talked a little bit about the preliminary race on Thursday.
Carrie Madsen continuing a great run for the past month and getting yourself in good position to, for Saturday night of the Knoxville Nationals. Carrie, tonight you had to work your way up through the field. How did you manage? Is there any particular line you were looking for? How did you manage to get through everybody?
Oh, look, we had a good race car, so I could kind of get close to them and then sit there and wait when they bobbled or did something. Then you try to make a counteraction and just take each car slowly at a time. And I really wasn't overly concerned about trying to get to the front as fast as I could to try and win the race. Just wanted to get a good finish. So just a nice, slow, steady pace, and awesome to get a podium finish.
How hard is it to temper yourself to not want, when a track's narrow like that and heavy, not to want to get big chunks at the start?
Yeah, look, for me, probably I've been guilty of being over-aggressive in the past. But, no, it's easy. You know, like, tonight was easy because we had a good points. Good points in the bank, so we didn't want to take that in a chance. And it's a double-edged sword, because sometimes if you're too conservative, you'll get run over, or you get in trouble being too conservative. So there's a balance, but it's about seeing the bigger picture, and I feel like I'm doing a better job seeing the bigger picture, and it's been a good ride.
This has been an amazing run for you. How does it feel as a driver going to the racetrack every night, knowing you've got a car, it's probably the fastest car in the Bay Area?
That's great. I mean, there's no words that can describe it. And but you're definitely not taking it for granted, because, you know, we've been on the bad side of that too. We've had some, we've built this team in the last 3.5 years, so we've had some shockers. But it feels like all the hard steps and all the hard work we've done is paying off, and we're getting great results to prove. Obviously, there's more bad nights coming, but the confidence level is definitely high, but it's like a tempered confidence, so we'll move on.
Now, you're the first prelim night. What is it like to have to sit through the other night and then wait for Saturday?
Look, if you had a bad night, it's just totally terrible. If you have a good night, I'm sure it's going to be a lot of fun.
All right. Thanks, Gary.
Thanks.
Was Carrie Madsen, and Madsen and Brown had what I think is one of the best interactions next to Linton Jeffries' PA interview after he got wrecked. This was the second best one, and if you didn't catch it in the post-race podcast, we had a little bit of a request to do it again. So here's what Brown and Madsen had to say about the heat race.
Yeah, so you can see, I was kind of hoping he would have just kind of tucked in there so I didn't have to make such a ballsy move myself. So, no, he's a good friend of mine. It's fun to be able to have a guy you can say, hey, joke and say, what are you going to do? And he proves he could do it.
And, of course, that's the wrong piece of audio. Here we go.
Me and Brown have a bit of a joke each week about who's going to put
four in the fluff.
we have a lot of fun with that. And he was saying that before the heat, Brown was going, where are you going to go? And I'm like, oh, I'm just going to take a conservative, man.
Exactly what he said.
And then after it, I went, four in the fluff, boy. I was not expecting to be able to do that. To be honest, we're all expecting heavy one-lane racetrack and weren't we going to have to do much. And it just opened up there, and I got some clean air. I really just went high to chase clean air and set the front of the nose down, and I just kind of got my own line up there. And Brian Morris and Engine Horsepower around everybody. It was just mind-bending, mind-boggling to me, but it was pretty exciting at the same time.
Yeah, that one's going in the sound drop library, the four and the fluff. But Carrie Madsen, this guy's becoming one of the best interviews in sprint car racing, and he's highly entertaining to listen to. And so is this guy, Brian Brown, who won on Thursday. Here's what Brownie had to say.
Brian, congratulations. Why don't you talk us through that last restart?
Just got a good run on Sam and, you know, stuck the bottom in one and two and went into three, and he kind of chopped me a little bit, and I kind of figured at that point I'm going to run second. And then I was able to get going again and get another run in one and two and got a little bit further up beside him that time and was able to sneak on by. So overall great night. You know, couldn't ask for much more. We'll probably be starting the first couple rows tomorrow or on Saturday, and that's really all we can ask for.
Brian Brown right there talking about that. Brown had more to say about his win after the preliminary night.
Anytime you win, you're confidence just gets higher and higher and higher. And I don't care if you win a heat race or hot laps or whatnot, you know, to win the 360 Nationals, win the front row challenge, and come here and win this, it's been a dream week. I just hope the dream doesn't, well, I don't wake up and it's not real. So really looking forward to Saturday. I've been looking forward to this for 360 days. And all we ask for every year is an opportunity to win it, and we've got another opportunity, and this year hopefully we put the nail in the coffin.
How did that last caution flag re-energize you in the feature when you knew you got that caution, able to catch up to later?
I was counting on running second because I couldn't really see Sam, and then it just gave me another opportunity to catch him there, and I was content running second. I was still going to be good in points if I ran second. If I got the opportunity, I wanted to try to win, but I wasn't going to do something stupid to take myself out of position, and here we are.
All right, thanks.
That was Brian Brown following the race on Thursday night. So we wrap up Thursday there, and we go into Friday. And Friday morning, one of the best stories from Thursday night was Ryan Bunton. And we did this interview as our feature story audio, but I wanted to share it with you. Ryan did a great job, and here's what Ryan Bunton had to say after he put himself eventually into the A main for Saturday night.
One of the best stories to come out of our first preliminary night, Ryan Bunton. It looks like you can have a good shot of being solidly in the feature for Saturday night. And it was definitely an adventurous night for you. Let's take it through qualifying, everything that happened.
Oh, I know it. Just from really a week ago, to be honest with you, last Saturday, we weren't even going to do the Nationals. We didn't have a motor. Both of our motors were down. And luckily, Tom Ryder came through. And our motor was actually on the dyno last Monday. And my parents drove out to Pennsylvania and picked it up, and we were just scrambling to get here. We barely made it here yesterday.
And so you get in, and you draw a good number, and you lay down a great qualifying lap.
Yeah, really, 14.8. 14.9 was my personal best here at the beginning of the year, and to run a 14.8, I just did it at the right time. You know, the Nationals is the right time to run a 14.8. I wish I could have done that 14.7. That would have just been, you know, that top tier, those guys that run that. It's just amazing what they do. But yeah, I was really happy to turn a 14.8.
Then in the heat race, things were going pretty well, but then the motor starts laying down.
Yeah, I tell you, we got lucky with a restart there. We got bunched back up, and I knew just from racing here that if you put a little pressure on somebody, there's a chance they're going to fail. And we really got lucky, got into that transfer spot, and took the white flag, and it instantly just dumped onto seven cylinders.
So you change motors, you put the short track motor in, you're going through the feature, then a fuel line comes loose.
Yeah, I know. It's just, it didn't end. We had the only other motor we have is a 15-year-old 12-headed motor, and it's probably got about the same horsepower as a 360 does. And we went to start off the A main, and I noticed that I was feeling water or something pouring all over me at the start of the A, and I looked down, and before I knew it, fuel was just pouring everywhere. It was coming out of the main, and used up all my tear-offs at the beginning of the race, and was just racing with my helmet about halfway open, and just had methanol all over me until that red flag came out.
And the red came out, but you managed to hang on, put yourself in good position. How does it feel being here after all that, and you're solidly in points, a good shot at making the feature on Saturday?
It's just surreal. I mean, like I said, you know, last Saturday we weren't even going to come, and we just came into this with no expectations and just try to have a positive attitude and do the best we can, and it's just it is mind-blowing.
I noticed the car, really neat scheme, camouflage, and it's signed by military personnel and kids. What's the story behind that?
Absolutely. We don't have big corporate sponsors or anybody like that, so we don't have a liability to put anybody's name on the car. So we run a body shop, and we didn't want to put some cheesy paint scheme or anything like that. We wanted to give something back to the people that have given so much to us. And I tell you, it really enlightens a lot of people. They come down, they'll sign the car, give me some stories, and just talk about loved ones, and it's awesome for everybody involved.
Ryan Bunton, one of the best stories of the week, and just awesome for his race team. It made for a good story. It's one of the better reads we had during the Knoxville Nationals. And a little bit later on, we stumbled across Andy Gregg, who eventually became the Knoxville Nationals Rookie of the Year for 2014. But prior to him winning that award, here's what he had to say with us before the races on Friday.
Andy Gregg, welcome to Knoxville Raceway here tonight. Is this your first trip out here ever? Have you ever seen the place before this?
No, I've never even seen it. Just pictures, obviously, and calendars and YouTube and you name it like that. It's the closest I've ever been to it. So, yeah, when I rolled in last week for the 360 deal, I mean, it was like a culture shock compared to what we see at home.
And what's been the biggest adjustment for you coming to the big racetrack here at Knoxville compared to what you see in California?
I would have to say, honestly, the biggest thing is me personally, just trying to get the car a better feel of the car underneath me on a track this big. We have Calistoga, which is a half mile, but it's a different kind of half mile. And I'm real comfortable there and confident there. But the 360 deal, I was real confident after my qualifying night. And then our second night, I kind of slipped up. The Cappy, I slipped up really bad. And I've been telling people I might not be the best racer out here, but I'm the happiest.
And it looks like you have a really nice deal put together. You have Miller sponsorship this year. It looks like a really nice program.
Yeah, we do what we can. I take a lot of pride in making sure my stuff looks good. One thing that stuck in my head a long time ago, I learned from one of the Tyner boys, is they told me just because you have crap doesn't mean it has to look like crap. So I take a lot of pride in making my stuff look the best I possibly can. Even though we are one of the more underfunded teams, I do appreciate everything that Miller Fortune does for us and Mike's Hard Lemonade on the other car and the associate sponsors, FK Rod Ends and K&N and BR Motorsports and King Racing Products. Without them, I couldn't be doing it.
When did you decide you were coming out here?
Oh, it's been over a year and a half in the process for us because it's such a big ordeal to leave California and drive 34 hours one direction. You have to plan so far in advance that we even took this year and stepped back at home and raced less races away from home, more stayed close to home to cut back on our travel expenses so we'd have that extra money to get here. Because once you set up arrange time off of work for 2 weeks. You know, you got campers, you got all this stuff, all these logistics you have to cover. If something were to happen back home, like we didn't race the weekend before we left because if something were to happen, we couldn't make it, then you have, well, I would have been out $4,000 even before we left.
And is this the start of you coming out on a regular basis, do you think? Still to be decided, or do you think you're enjoying this enough that you'll try to make it an annual pilgrimage?
I definitely want to make it an annual deal. Gosh, right now if somebody walked up to me and said, how would you like to just stay here for the next month and race weekly, I would do it. I mean, I fell in love with the place, too. Even though it's intimidating and it kind of frightens me a little bit, I want to race here so bad you don't even know.
All right, Andy Gregg.
So, Andy Gregg, your 2014 Knoxville Nationals Rookie of the Year. Friday night's program was a great race. It was a theme of the Knoxville Nationals this year, and Shane Stewart won with a last lap pass of Craig Kinzer, and he broke it down for us in the press conference.
Well, like I said on the podium, sometimes when you're leading, you just don't really know where to go, and, you know, hats off to him. He drove a great race. He honestly just left the bottom open for me a little bit on that last lap, or coming for the white, I should say, and I was able to capitalize on it. But, you know, I was thinking that he was actually going to run the bottom, and I was going to have to run the middle, and I was able to keep up with him doing that in one and two, and it just worked out for me, honestly. My car was good, and, you know, the time trials are stressful, and of course making it through the heat race is stressful, and I feel like if you can do both of those, the A main, it's crucial, but it's not as crucial. So I was going to be happy with running second, and it just played out well for me.
That was Shane Stewart following his victory. The man he passed, Craig Kinzer's had some struggles this year. He had a nice run on Friday at Knoxville, and even though he's disappointed finishing second in the big picture, it was a good night for his race team.
Well, like Shane said, seconds, I don't know. I'm happy I finished second for our points, especially the drawing as late as we did. I was really worried drawing as late as we did and how the night was going to wind up, and just to be up here with these two guys at the end of the night is an accomplishment for me. I haven't had the greatest year, and we didn't know really where we were going to be at the half-mile stuff when we came into Knoxville. So this is tickled. Hate giving races away, and I didn't give it away, but I did make it as hard as I could have for them, that's for sure. That restart, I was getting freer, getting into turns, mainly getting in. Once I got to the center, I was okay. I could come off turns, and I felt great around the top, but especially when I hit traffic, I really didn't know where to go. I heard Shane. I'm pretty sure I heard Shane coming outside of me there, and I just thought he was coming on the outside, and he didn't. He ducked around, and you know, I gave him a shot, maybe trying to get back to him coming off of four, but you know, he definitely was hooked up too, and you know, he stayed good at that point. Now I got back to the bottom and just ran second.
Craig Kinzer very gracious in defeat. Mark Dobmeier thrilled with a third place finish over at the Nationals for his preliminary night, and he took a moment to talk to us about his third place finish at Knoxville.
Mark, congratulations. Solid podium finish on your preliminary night. You were involved in some of the most cutthroat racing of the evening, it seemed like, with the sliders and stuff between you and Craig and you and Shane.
Yeah, it was, all in all, it was a good race. My hat's off to Knoxville because they created an awesome racing surface tonight. I mean, you could run the bottom. Like, Craig was running the bottom that whole feature pretty much. I was running the top, and we stayed about the exact same speed, it felt like. I mean, he might pull away a little bit here, then I'd gain a little bit. Just a good racing surface for some cutthroat racing, and yeah, it was right off the bat. We were swapping back and forth, and then about three quarters of the way through, Shane jumped in and got in on the mix, and he ended up picking our pockets at the end of it. So it was just good racing at the end of the day.
The ferocity of that racing, is that just chalked up to it's the Knoxville Nationals? It has to be. Did they ever cross over the line? Did you feel?
No. I felt it was all good. When it's the Knoxville Nationals, you got no friends. Everything's pushed aside, and if you got to push an issue, you push an issue. Overall, I'd say the racing we had up at the front of the pack was clean as you're going to get at the Knoxville Nationals. So I didn't feel there's any dirty moves out there at all.
And is there any particular place your track car worked better, towards the bottom or on the top? I saw you search around quite a bit, and you were on the top, and you tried the bottom a few times. So.
Yeah, to be honest, my car was excellent. I was I'm a little bit disappointed in myself because I think I had a car that could have won the race. But I worked the bottom right away, and then I felt once I was rolling, I was going to go up top. And after a couple corners, Craig showed me that he was good on the bottom too, and got by me. But then he didn't really pull away, so I stayed on top the whole time. And then towards the end, after we got racing with Shane and Donnie, I moved down to the bottom, and god darn, my car was still excellent down there. So I think I should have committed myself a little bit more to the bottom during that race, and I would have had a little better shot at it.
So we're doing this preliminary night on Friday. How is that going to change your approach to get ready for Saturday?
It's not going to change nothing, to be honest. I've raced enough different track surfaces here and everything. We're just going to, at the end of the day, we're sitting in a good position. We're locked into the 8, I think, at 11th, last I heard anyway. And we're just going to watch the track surface, see what it does, and make a few adjustments on our car, and let her eat.
One last question. Because the A-Main's 50 laps now, does that change your mentality in the preliminary feature a little bit?
Not really, to be honest. I like the longer races. It seems like the longer a race goes on, I seem to strive a little bit more, and I seem to be better at the end of the races. So I'm enjoying the 50-lap race.
Hey, Mark Darbyne.
And, of course, we move on to Saturday night where Donnie Schatz. Schatzville Nationals, and it was amazing to watch it over the last 10 laps when we had that caution flag, to see when Brown passed for the lead, Knoxville went to elated, and when Schatz got the lead back the next lap, it went to deflated. But whatever you think of his dominance or whatnot, Schatz, one of the best sprint car drivers to ever strap in. 8 of the last 9 Knoxville Nationals is a number that puts him in very rare air at this point. And with no sign of slowing down at all, here's what Donnie Schatz had to say following the Nationals.
There was no hitting the marks in 1 and 2 anymore. I mean, that's where Brian drove around me on the top. And it got, you know, you could still get in the corner pretty hard on the bottom, but once you got to the center, you had to slow down so much and about have your left front tire up on the infield, and you just couldn't get yourself back going. You know, just lost so much speed that, you know, starting to make me a little nervous. And I thought, well, if I don't make a mistake, you know, nobody's probably going to go around there. Couldn't make the middle work. So, but he went by. You know, he passed me, went by me. You know, I tried to not get rattled or do anything silly. In the next corner, you know, he went to the bottom. We went through the 1 and 2 again, and then when he went to 3 and 4, he just went to the top, and I was able to get back by on the bottom. So, you know, it's that's what racing's all about, is trying to make them right decisions. And you know, I made a wrong decision, and Brian went by, and he made a wrong decision, and I went back by, and you don't get too many opportunities like that. So, you know, it's all about, it's a racing. That's the way it works. You know, you make mistakes. I make them all the time. And lose races that way. I can remember a couple races this year that I've had Kerry do that to me. So, you know, it happens quite often.
Donnie Schatz is after his 8th Knoxville Nationals victory. And we did have a moment to talk to Kerry Madsen following the feature. And here, we just did a quick interview with him. Here's what he had to say.
Kerry, podium finish again. Not exactly what you're looking for, but still continuing a great run for your team.
Yeah, look, you've got two emotions. One is disappointment, and the other is just absolute ecstatic because we got Kinnerig Racing its first podium at the Knoxville Nationals, and podium still means a lot of this at this race. And what we've accomplished in the last 2 months has just been mind-boggling. So we feel like, you know, with Tyler Swank on the team, if we can keep things rolling the way we are, the future's bright. So pretty exciting.
It sounds like you're already considering this as a building block for the team as far as Nationals performance.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So you know, we'll let it spurn us on. We've got a lot of races left this year and big races, and just feels like we're getting better and better.
All right, Kerry Madsen.
That was Kerry Madsen following his finish. And Brian Brown, for everything he's been through, all these second-place finishes, incredibly gracious. And after the race on Saturday was no exception. Brown was incredibly gracious in defeat and shared his thoughts with everybody.
We've had a heck of a run. I mean, this last week and a half has been probably the best of my whole entire career. And just proud of all of our guys. Congratulations to Donnie. I'm going to get him one of these years. I just don't know when. It seems like I don't know when you're catching him there and you don't. I thought, okay, I'm just going to ride here because I know if I show him, he's going to get his elbows up. And I felt like all night long my best position for me to be in this race was to be chasing Donnie Schatz, not him chasing me. And I got a run there, and I thought, gosh, I better go. And when I went, I was able to get by him, and then I think he grabbed another gear, and so be it. It's tough. I'd love to get up here and tell you guys I'm so happy, and I am happy, but to be that close to winning the Knoxville Nationals is it's frustrating. But we'll come back next year. Our Knoxville Nationals starts tomorrow, and we're going to work twice as hard, and we're going to get it one of these years.
Any more questions? Oh, sorry. Yes, Jim.
Of course, it's what can you say? I mean, that's why his partners have stuck with him. I mean, that's the reaction you get after losing the biggest sprint car race in the world, and it was just amazing his reaction. A lot of people probably would not have handled it that well. I thought Brian did a great job, and I mean, what can you say? So that's going to conclude our review of the 2014 Knoxville Nationals. But before I go, we've got a few people we have to thank that made our trip possible this year. We stayed with John and Jackie. They're great hosts as usual, and they're like part of the family now. And my roommates, Rex, Greg, Gene, Scott, Nick, and Bob, all of you guys, we had so much fun this year. We made the best of a rain out, found some new adventures along the way, and had a lot of fun with everyone, and can't wait to do it with you again next year. Also, Bob Baker, Tom Schmey, David Herman from the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum for letting us work a lot out of there and letting me host the Little 500 fan forum again, which you'll be able to download later this week and listen to on our podcast midweek. But thank you for them for allowing us to work out of there at various times because it was kind of handy, and we took full advantage of that. And all the photographers in turn two that didn't look at me funny when I went running down through the gate to shoot the World Challenge for a few minutes just because I've never shot a race there before and I just wanted to do it, and I don't have a monster flash, so it was like, heck, why not? Let's go do it, and had a lot of fun doing that. And of course, all Crystal and all of her staff at the Knoxville Raceway Media Center made our life a lot easier throughout the week in there. And Brian Stickle, Bill W., Eric Arnold, everybody else over at Knoxville Raceway, Kyle Luders, Chris Krug, everybody that contributed to us having a great day there, and Mike Roberts for looking me up to make sure I got everything kicked off with the first question in the press conference almost every night. So on behalf of everyone at TJSlideways.com, thank you for listening to our recap of the 2014 FVP Knoxville Nationals presented by Casey's General Stores. Next year, we'll set up the studio a little earlier so we don't have as many technical issues, and we'll take a look back and business as usual next week, and we'll start covering everything. Thank you and good night.
Thank you.
for listening to this edition of TJ Slideways Live.